Hello there, Star Wars fam, and welcome to another episode of Jawa Jabber, playing exclusively on Utini Radio. I'm your host, David Wren, and I am joined by my best friend and co-host, Dennis the Phantom Menace.
Hey everyone, on today's episode, we will be discussing our thoughts and opinions on the two latest episodes of Star Wars The Clone Wars Season 7, and they are called Gone with a Trace and Deal No Deal. We'll also be talking about a few things regarding The Rise of Skywalker and our anxiety over trying to get the Blu-rays, since the world has essentially come to an end.
But this is a happy podcast, so we're going to try and keep all the real-world stuff where it belongs, in the trash.
Like a circus speeder.
Exactly. So, sit back, relax.
There's literally nothing else you can do right now, so listen to the podcast.
Exactly. So, sit back, relax, and get ready to experience the power of this fully armed and operational podcast.
This is the way.
Yes. You're my guest. I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Commence primary ignition.
Oh, brilliant. Let's get going.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
All right, welcome everybody to Jawa Jabber episode number 7. We're so happy that you're here listening. We know you are all kind of cooped up in your homes due to our little public emergency in our country. And so we're glad that you're here to listen to all of our thoughts on the latest couple episodes of The Clone Wars.
Yes, we're so glad that you're here, and we hope that you are enjoying your quarantine, perhaps with a quarantini or something. You know, just make lemons out of lemonade. I mean, make lemonade out of lemons. You knew what I meant.
Make lemon... Oh, okay.
Wait, yeah, I said it wrong twice. No, did I?
No, no, the second part was right.
Yeah, don't edit this out. This is gold.
Okay. So the first episode of Ahsoka's arc in this season is called Gone with a Trace, and it always has a problem for me to say it because I want to say Gone Without a Trace, which is what I originally thought the episode was called until I looked at it closer, and it makes more sense because Trace refers to a character.
And I just realized in my notes I have episode 5, Gone Without a Trace. I'm changing it right now.
I don't know, it rolls off the tongue easier because everyone's used to saying it that way.
It does.
But so Trace is actually the name of a new character that we actually encounter, that Ahsoka lands on her like a maintenance platform at the beginning of the episode. And so that's where Trace comes from, and that makes sense with the episode title. But do you have the fortune cookie for this episode?
Of course I do. You know it's one of my favorite parts of any Clone Wars episode. So the fortune cookie for this episode is, if there is no path before you, create your own.
Sounds like something Ashley might have written.
I know, right? And I wish it applied to the episode a little bit more.
Well,
I mean, it does, but like in a broader scope.
I think it's very broad. I think it's like describing her entire arc. I don't think it's like just that episode.
Right, not just the episode. Where like the previous ones with the Bad Batch, they all kind of were interconnected with the episode itself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like the trust and hope thing with Echo and Rex, you know, like, I mean, that was like blatant, almost in your face. But, you know, obviously the kids that are watching are not going to understand that. But like for me, I like when the fortune cookie applies to the episode, and I was just left a little underwhelmed by not the fortune cookie, but like, I guess its correlation within the episode.
Well, I guess you could think of it as if she's, could you read it one more time? Because
sure.
I forgot what it
If there is no path before you, create your own.
Okay, so I guess it kind of is, in my mind, maybe bridging from when she left the Jedi Order and where we find her now, and she's having to create her own path because she doesn't really know what she's going to do from this point on. She's been in the Jedi Temple and training as a Padawan her entire life, so it's, I guess it does, in a sense, kind of connect to it, but I do understand that it's more of a broader statement.
Yeah, and she's not creating her own path. She's on a motorcycle that breaks down. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like she's not out there forging her own path. She literally has an accident and lands in this girl's lap.
Well, yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because there's a lot actually to unpack there.
Yeah.
So this first step on her journey is helping us to understand how she's going from the Ahsoka that we knew before she left the Jedi Temple and where we see her in Star Wars Rebels as Fulcrum. So the development of her character there is kind of being played out in front of us. And so that makes me excited to see how we get from point A to point B. And so this episode begins with Ahsoka riding away on a kind of speeder bike, which it's actually not a speeder bike, but we'll get to that in a second. But she's riding away from the galactic city of Coruscant and descending into the lower levels of the planet city. And I just thought, I always think about Coruscant like, I wish there was an actual planet like that in our universe.
Right? It would be so cool.
Because just the massive scale of this place is just mind-blowing. Like, yeah, you see massive skyscrapers, but the whole planet, including almost its core, is also the city.
The entire planet is one big city.
So her bike is actually modeled very closely after a motorcycle, not a speeder. Its design is very different from the speeder bikes we see in Return of the Jedi or the Mandalorian or the swoop bikes we see in Solo: A Star Wars Story. They have just the handlebars and the way that it is actually designed. If you look at it really closely, it's more motorcycle-ish than like the speeders we're used to, like the Endor scene.
And you see that later when Trace is like trying to fix it and like mm-hmm. she's pulling the, I never know what they're called. My dad had a motorcycle and I call them pedals, but they're not pedals because they're on the arm things. But like mm-hmm. it's how you rev up the gas. Like you're not pressing yeah. the gas like you do in a car. You're pressing the whatever it is.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a, maybe just in my mind, a nice little homage to George Lucas, because mm-hmm. he loved muscle cars, loved motorcycles, still does, and it's just one of those things.
That's why we have pod racing.
Yeah, that's exactly why we have pod racing.
That's exactly why we have pod
it's
racing.
Space racing, essentially.
It's space NASCAR is what it is.
It is kind of space NASCAR. A little more exciting, though, instead of just going in a circle constantly. But
oh, my God. Okay, so my dad loved NASCAR, and I hate even saying this out loud because it still embarrasses me that he loved NASCAR so much. And, like, so when we saw episode one, when I got it on video and, like, was watching it at home, he's like, you realize this is just NASCAR, right? I'm like, no, it's not. That's so cooler. I'm like, it's so much cooler, Dad. What are you talking about?
I'm literally not going in over 600 loops in a circle. So
I know,
and it's like exactly. nothing happens to the end. Like, I actually, when my dad used to watch NASCAR a lot, I was just hoping there was a crash because it's like something exciting happened, you know?
Right, exactly. It's the only time there was anything,
which is kind of horrible because people really got injured and hurt or died.
There goes Maverick.
You see a squirrel or something?
Probably.
Yeah, but anyway, this bike, this motorcycle that she's riding, the design is different, but the sound effects are exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it's like the same sound effects. Yeah.
Yes, and so I like that. And where she actually goes down into, it's the industrial area called the Works. I don't know if you knew that. This is also where Dooku met with Sidious at the end of Attack of the Clones.
You know, that first shot where Ahsoka is on the bike, mm-hmm. I was going to say that it, and I have it in my notes here, like, it reminded me when Dooku was going to meet with Sidious at the end of Attack of the Clones that we just watched in the group watch the other day. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, that whole setting reminded me of that. So that doesn't surprise me that we've seen that before, because it really, it's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, the lighting was a little different in that in Attack of the Clones, it was kind of yes. reddish and it was a sunset, I think.
Yes.
But the same area, so that was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But most of the episode occurs in the lower levels, or the seedy areas where the poor, the outcasts, and the criminals all live. So kind of the area where Anakin and Obi-Wan chase Zan Wessel in Attack of the Clones. Mm. That's yes. kind of more yeah. where we're at.
And actually, I thought the whole sequence with her bike malfunctioning mm-hmm. and like her going down lower into the levels of Coruscant reminded me of episode two and like the speeder chase.
Oh, it absolutely you know,
like,
is.
A lot of the same sound effect. Mm-hmm. It totally reminded me of that.
No, absolutely. It was even the same music when she's falling.
Yes, I thought so. Okay. Yeah. I thought so.
Good connection there for sure.
Yeah, thanks.
And so actually much of the episode occurs even further than where Obi-Wan and Anakin were, down into an area affectionately called
Level 1313.
And it's also mentioned in the episode itself by Trace.
It is.
And so what, can you just explain what 1313 was for many of our listeners who don't know?
So 1313, before Disney bought Lucasfilm, there were many projects in development through Lucasfilm, one of which was The Clone Wars, which is why it got canceled, and then we now have Season 7. But one of the other things that LucasArts was making was a video game called Star Wars 1313, which was supposed to be a bounty hunter-based first-person game where you took over the persona of Boba Fett, and he is crawling around the underbelly of Coruscant. And there was actually a, I think they call it a demo of the game, where like you could watch like the first 10 minutes of the game. And I mean, the graphics were awesome and it looked super cool. And it just, it went away.
Yeah.
Disney said no. And
that's kind of sad because it would have been cool.
It is sad. It would have been really cool. But see, I like, just like the expanded universe, like they're taking bits and pieces of all the old stuff and like reintroducing it into canon. So some people, some of our listeners might be against this, but I personally really enjoy when they do stuff like this.
Oh, I do too, because it actually doesn't completely wipe away those concepts. It just reintegrates them into a way that's more, I don't know, a newer version.
A different point of view, if you will.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And I just enjoy the fact that they're not recycling what's in the old Legends books, but they're making it their own. And some people hate it, like you said.
Right. Well, look what they've done with Thrawn.
Oh, yeah. They've redone that.
You know, I mean, they've made a whole new trilogy. They threw him in Rebels. There's going to be more books. I mean, yeah.
Now that we brought it up, just as a quick aside, I'm almost certain they're going to bring in Revan.
Oh, 100%. In the new High Republic or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wasn't there, what was it in the press release? There was something that was named after Revan? Or no, it's in Rise of Skywalker, one of the statues or something, right?
Yes, it's Darth Nihilus.
There you go. Yes, okay.
Yes. So that'll be exciting. Yeah. But so you were talking about how this was based upon design elements of the game, 1313.
Yes.
And the screen caps and all of that that they actually had from the game and the demo, but it was also from the demo footage from Star Wars Underworld, which was a canceled TV show. So they used parts of that, which was cool.
I forgot about that one, yes.
And of course, they made it animated, so but they just used certain elements and design elements and incorporated it into this episode. And so the musical score, while Ahsoka is driving this motorcycle speeder bike, is Luke Skywalker's theme from A New Hope. It's just very faint.
Yes.
I like that.
I heard it.
There's just so many little things that you just think, wow, they really put time into this. Even if for some people it might feel like a filler episode, there's things in
which I'll admit I'm one of those people. Like it does kind of feel that way to me. But I did like, again, the little details in this episode I really enjoyed.
Yeah, you can tell that the people working behind this really love it. They're not just casual whatever.
And I love how they'll take, I know we've beaten this dead horse, but like, I love how they take the stuff that they maybe didn't use 20 years ago and make it now. You know what I mean? Like the throne in Rise of Skywalker.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You know, Palpatine's throne. That was back to The Empire Strikes Back. That was back from 1979.
Yeah.
You know, like concept art from Ralph McQuarrie that, you know, finally 40 years later made it onto the screen. I love that Star Wars does that.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. That's something they talk a lot about in the documentary for Rise of Skywalker. It's really cool.
Oh, I can't wait.
So during this motorcycle's breakdown, as you kind of mentioned earlier, there's a radar dish that she breaks off of an airship.
I totally thought, like, I know that it wasn't and it wouldn't be the right, but I, as soon as I saw that radar dish, I said, oh my God, she broke the Falcon.
Yeah, because that's what comes to mind.
Right. And then it wasn't. And I said, wait, yeah, duh. Like, we're not in Falcon territory.
Well, but yeah, but I mean, it was a nice homage to it.
Oh, I know. Yeah. But I was totally like, literally, I was like, oh, my God, the Falcon.
But, it, you know, that whole theme, it always seems to be happening in Star Wars, that radar dish is always broken off somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And also in this episode, these are super, super tiny Easter eggs, which I'm not going to pretend I saw it when I saw it. I actually looked it up a little bit, and someone else on YouTube, actually a channel called Screen Crush, he does a really great breakdown of some of these things. And so I just want to make sure that it doesn't sound like I'm super knowledgeable on these things, because I don't really understand a lot of it until I research it more. But
I was going to say, we just sit in our quarantine and research this stuff, so we sound like we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, but there's a lot of species that show up in this episode that are really cool, because you have Rodians, like Greedo.
Mm-hmm.
You have an Ithorian.
Yep.
You have a couple of Twi'leks. There's a billboard in one of the scenes that is Bith. And then there's the same species as Pondababa, or I like to call him Scrotum Face. But
yes, uh-huh. I did see him.
Just his species is an Aqualish. And in fact, most of the aliens in this episode appear in the Mos Eisley Cantina from A New Hope, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
All those that I just mentioned, they're all in there. And they're also dressed like their original action figures in this episode. They're like the way the colors and their clothing are, it's like the action figures. It's not what we see, how they did it in live action in A New Hope.
That's really cool.
So I'm just like wow. That. I'm like, that level of detail is what makes this
right.
Just, you know, chef's kiss.
Uh-huh.
It's perfect.
I would say that's awesome.
And so we talked about how she crash lands onto this platform where Trace has her own, she's like a mechanic. She has her own mechanic shop, and she's building a Nebula class freighter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a light freighter, and it's similar in design to the VCX-100 from Rebels.
Hmm, I thought it looked... Okay, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
When they took off, I was like, mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah, the engines.
Like, yeah, that looks really familiar.
Yes, so it's just another kind of freighter, which, of course, you know, is abundant in the Star Wars universe, but that kind of, I think, was obviously there on purpose to remind us of, hey, Rebels reference here kind of thing. I also really liked when Ahsoka is in that fist fight with one of, like, the gangsters.
Okay, can we talk about how freaking awesome she is in that fight?
Honestly, I didn't think I could like Ahsoka more than I already do, but...
Right?
Like, I do.
When Trace was like, you know, stand back, I don't need help or whatever, I'm just like, you might want to rethink this. And then all of a sudden she's like, you know, you can help me a little bit or whatever she says. And then she just goes full on Ahsoka, and it was great. Like, and did you notice she had her Ahsoka pose, even though she didn't have the sabers? Like,
mm-hmm.
She totally did her, like, Ahsoka pose.
Yeah, so that scene, she uses the Force a little bit to stop the punch, because I'm like,
yes,
that's a huge creature, and she's, you know, she's mm-hmm. a Jedi, but still, you know, or not a Jedi anymore, whatever.
Well, yeah, and I feel like she's also trying to hide that also.
Mm-hmm. And the score when she's fighting and she's kicking them is actually a stripped down version of the main Star Wars theme, but it sounds different because she's fighting without any of her lightsabers.
Okay.
Which if you listen really closely, it's much more lighthearted because it's supposed to be a funny mm-hmm. scene, because then she kicks that guy in the nuts, which was...
Right. Which was fantastic.
Which every guy in like a 20-mile radius watching this was like in pain.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
But yeah, that was awesome. And do you remember what Trace asks her after that?
Oh my God, stop. Of course I remember. It's like capital letters in my notes. So Trace is extremely impressed with Ahsoka's fighting style. And she asks her where she learned to fight like that. And Ahsoka says that her brother taught her how to fight.
Yeah, that was very sweet.
And I started to cry. I had to pause it.
Yeah, and of course they had that little swell of music, so they wanted...
Right, of course. But I just... Anakin, it breaks my heart.
It really reminded me a lot of Obi-Wan and Anakin's friendship.
Yeah.
You know, it makes Anakin's, you know, betrayal later that much more tragic for all of us.
Ugh,
especially for Ahsoka, because then it reminded me of Rebels when she sees him as Vader.
I do not want to see Order 66 again. I just don't.
Yeah, that's not going to be fun, but...
No, it's not.
Yeah, but I really wanted to... I mean, I like that action for the little amount of action that I guess we saw in this episode, but I really wanted to zoom in on the dialogue between Trace and Ahsoka, because I just thought it was really great world building in that dialogue.
Yes, it was.
And it was literally just a few sentences. That's pretty mm-hmm. great if you can do that in just a few sentences.
You mean how the Jedi forgot about the lower inhabitants of Coruscant and that whole thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. And it shows, again, something that we talk about a lot with the different point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, Ahsoka has just gone through this thing with the Jedi Council and, you know, realizes that they're not as great maybe as, you know, she thought they were, or like they wouldn't be on her side and whatever, you know, that whole betrayal kind of thing. So she's also seeing the Jedi in a new light. And then she meets Trace, who also doesn't have a high opinion of the Jedi and think that they're responsible for the war. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's finding out, wow, it's not just me. Like, other people are feeling this way too.
Yeah, I think it really highlights the fact that I always was wondering how Emperor Palpatine was able to convince everybody that the Jedi started this, right? But even Trace says, you know, Jedi running around, policing everything, starting wars.
Uh-huh.
People felt left behind by the Jedi. She even said it. She said, they've forgotten all about us.
They forgot. Yeah, they forgot about the lower inhabitants, of course.
And two, they blame the Jedi for starting the war. And she says, I guess they're not what I thought they'd be. You know, you hear stories as a kid.
You hear stories, yeah, the old stories.
And it's
yes.
like, it's kind of like this legend thing. And it reminds me of Rey when she heard about Luke, you know?
I thought he was a myth.
Right. Like, it's just a legend kind of thing. And it's kind of removed from the everyday normal life of people. And then obviously the war weakened their faith in their government, which made a way for the new government to arise as the Galactic Empire. So, like I said, pretty great world building in just a few sentences.
The people don't look at the Jedi much anymore, like maybe with the respect or something that we're going to see in the High Republic era.
Right. And that, like I was going to say, that also goes into the whole, you know, for 1,000 generations, peace and justice. And then you have them acting like soldiers. And then in less than 20 years, we get to like A New Hope. And it's like, everybody's forgotten about the Force. They don't even, you know, like, I mean, everybody as in like the normal people, not like Vader. But then you have people like Han Solo, like, you know, the blaster's better than some hokey religions, because
Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
Exactly. That's the exact quote, which I'm not surprised you know by heart.
I love that quote.
And so Trace finds her sister, Rafa, in a space laundromat stealing clothes. That was funny.
Yeah.
And actually, later on, they kind of explain it in other supplemental material that she won the laundromat by gambling. So the laundromat
she owns. Yes, she was a heavy gambler.
Yeah, but she's stealing clothes from people who are using it, of course. And in a lot of the episodes in the Clone Wars, they have a lot of posters in the background with Ourobesh. And sometimes I like to try to figure out what they're saying. And this one was particularly interesting because the poster in the laundry room, the Ourobesh letters said Calrissian soap, which, if you know how Calrissian is, Lando. And it also says Landomat, which is great.
Ha.
So maybe maybe Lando's family was in the soap business before he broke bad.
Maybe. Right. Before.
Yeah. It was smuggling business and then Cloud City.
That would explain why he's so clean.
Yeah, and fresh and suave.
And suave and, yeah, you know.
Maybe he started this brand Suave.
Maybe.
Suave.
Suave. Rico Suave.
So just as a really brief, because, I mean, everybody can obviously go watch it, but just like a really quick overview of what happens. Rafa, Trace's older sister, always is kind of getting into maybe like the bad stuff about, you know, trying to live a life in this kind of environment and getting involved with people you don't really want to get involved with. And so she was commissioned to build some droids for somebody. And long story short, Trace is building the droid and Ahsoka's helping her. They're called binary load lifter droids. And the first time we actually hear that is from 3PO.
In A New Hope.
Yes.
Yep, exactly.
And Ahsoka's first interaction with these droids was actually in Star Wars Forces of Destiny cartoon. I didn't see that, but I actually found out that's where, because she says, I know one of these, you know, she kind of recognized it.
Right, yes.
And I'm like, where did she ever encounter these? I mean, I don't remember this in Clone Wars, and it's not. It was in a small cartoon called Forces of Destiny that you can watch on YouTube. So essentially, Trace doesn't put the restraining bolt on one of these droids, and they're programmed for destruction. And so it just causes havoc and starts running through the lower levels of Coruscant. And one really tiny detail, again, that I love is that while it's running away, it kind of goes past Rafa, and we see Lothcats, or species of them anyway.
Yes, that's what I have in my notes. I said Lothcat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those are, of course, they run by Rafa in one of those scenes, but they're from Star Wars Rebels, but they're also a little cameo in The Mandalorian, which was cool.
That was really cool, and I did not expect that.
When I saw Baby Yoda walking up, and I saw that little Lothcat sitting there, I'm like, this is going to be awesome. And of course, they even made the teeth correct when it growled at him. I love that. I love seeing that in live action. And then it also reminds me of, even though we haven't been there, that little one in the cage in Batuu.
I know, but we're we're going.
Sleeping and with its little porg stuffed animal thing.
I know. So super cute. Who says Star Wars can't be cute?
I don't know.
We love our loth cats. And
clearly
our
nobody who's seen Star Wars would say that.
Right?
So, yeah, so that essentially is what happens. And they finally are able to grab a hold of this thing and turn off the button on its face that stops it from running around and destroying everything.
The blue button.
The blue button. That's right. And so what does Ahsoka do here?
Which is on the nose.
Which is on the nose again. Yes.
Again, what is it with droids and noses?
When they're turning the droid off, Trace is about to fall with the droid because it kind of was on this ledge when it turned off.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this part. You know what happens.
Yeah, I do too. And like, so she tries to like save the day like a normal human being. And then like, and that's why I said before, I think she's trying to hide her force usage because, you know, the way that Trace said about, you know, the Jedi starting the war and yada, yada, yada. Like, you know, she doesn't want to rub anyone the wrong way, so to speak, right now. Because she's at these people's mercy right now. Like, she's stuck there with them. But then eventually it gets to the point where she has to use the Force to save them.
I love that. I love that she was able to do that. And then that little Twi'lek child saw that.
Yeah.
I can imagine that if they've lived in the underworld for so long, they probably don't even know what that is.
Right.
Like, she didn't think Jedi, you know?
Right, yeah.
She was just kind of, like, surprised and wowed by it, like any child would be.
Like any child would be, exactly.
So yeah, that was essentially the entire first episode. And like
that was it.
Like we mentioned, it was pretty short, like actually all of these are, but it wasn't extremely, you know, it wasn't something you'd be talking about for days. It was kind of like, okay, cool.
No.
Yeah.
I literally watched it for the second time today.
Okay.
Just to, you know, review.
Yeah.
Like for our podcast, but like the other ones, because I normally watch the episode before we do our podcast, and like the other ones I had watched several times in addition to the pre-podcast one, and you know, this one not so much.
Well, it's just one of those, again, it's a beginning to her arc, so just like the Bad Batch,
I felt like it was a little more exciting than this one was.
Well, probably because it was, you know, very action-packed. This was more like, how's she dealing with this aftermath of her being blamed for something that wasn't her fault, you know?
Right.
I think it was just supposed to be a little bit slower, but I totally understand how people were like, meh, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly, I have that written down. It's like, I know it's a full arc, but eh,
yeah.
No thank you.
That was episode, what episode was this? I keep always messing.
That was episode 5.
Okay, because I always confuse ours, because we didn't start it with the same episode as they have. So,
correct.
So it's episode 5 called Gone with a Trace. And we're going to just continue in part 2 of our episode for the next one, since this one was kind of shorter. And we're just going to continue on with the second episode of Ahsoka's arc. It's going to be episode 6 of the Clone Wars. And that one is called Deal No Deal.
Yes. Not to be confused with Howie Mandel.
Right.
Deal or no deal.
And we'll be right back to discuss all about episode 6 after this word from our sponsor.
This is getting out of hand. Now there are two of them.
All right, Star Wars fam, welcome back. And now we'll be talking about episode 6, Deal No Deal.
With Howie Mandel.
Yes, exactly. Don't forget the beautiful Twi'leks with the briefcases.
We love you, Howie.
We do. You and your shiny bald head, you.
So at the beginning of this episode, we're back to where we were in the lower levels of Coruscant. And we have, did we talk? Okay, no, we're going to talk about it now. So I was going to say, did we talk about the name of the ship that they're fixing up? But that's in this episode.
That's in this episode, yeah.
It's blending together for me, man. I'm telling you.
Well, especially for me, considering in the last hour I've watched both of these again. So,
so it's all one thing to you.
Mm-hmm, pretty much.
So Ahsoka and Trace are working on this ship that Trace has kind of built on her own and put together on her own because she wants to be a pilot who leaves, you know, 1313 and is able to fly amongst the stars.
Yes.
And so Trace, I don't know if it's exactly the beginning scene, but it's very close to the beginning of the episode where she's essentially talking about the division of wealth on Coruscant. And I really like that they're using this as a plot device in the show because it's a corner in the galaxy that hasn't been very well explored. We did see some of that in The Last Jedi, but we saw like the uber wealthy, you know, on Canto Bight. But here we see the opposite.
Yes.
We see the poor, right. The lower middle class, people who are trying to scrape by. And so in this part of this
scene, wouldn't you think Luke would have been that kind of lower class?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point.
I mean, I'm sure the moisture farm made some money. Mm-hmm. I mean, not enough money for Luke to go to the academy, mm-hmm. but you know,
yeah,
because they had to hire all the droids and stuff. But I mean, I always took and like look at Rey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Rey's a scavenger. I mean, Rey, I think, was even
you're right
worse off than Luke. Kind of, you know.
Yeah, you're right. There are parallels there. I didn't think about that. It's a good point.
But I mean, come on, Rey got to live in an AT-AT. I mean, isn't that every Star Wars fan's dream?
Yeah, maybe a functioning one.
I'll tell you, man, Force Awakens with the, you know, like fan service. I mean, you had living in an AT-AT, Poe and Finn piloting a TIE fighter. I mean, you know, everyone always wanted to fly an X-Wing, but like, of course you wanted to fly a TIE fighter, and you never really got to see any of it except for like a shot here and there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got a whole sequence of them flying in a TIE fighter. I loved that part.
And a First Order TIE fighter, which was super fast.
A First Order TIE fighter, yes. And it had like the double back seat, which I thought was kind of neat. Mm-hmm. I still don't understand how if you're facing backwards, but the gun is forward and you have to turn to the right to make it go left. But the computer's telling you to go. I don't know. It still boggles.
We would have to consult the visual dictionary. I'm sure they updated like their weapon system. So maybe there's guns on both sides or something.
Right. But like it boggles my mind.
Yeah, but you did make a good point about that. And I consider Luke as like a, you know, like a farm boy thing. But the danger that they really encountered was really just Tusken Raiders. You know, it wasn't like Coruscant's lower level, you know, where you got everybody. You got bounty hunters.
Absolutely. And yeah. You've got. Yeah. And smugglers and
criminals and gang and all that. So, yeah. So but you did make a good point there. And so during this scene, Trace asks Ahsoka, so what were you doing up on the upper levels or, you know, where did you kind of come from?
Topside. They called it topside. Yeah, right. I liked that. I really liked that. I capitalized that in my notes. I thought that was neat.
Yeah, and then so like Ahsoka knows a lot more than a lot of people do because not everyone's educated down there.
Correct.
And so when she asks her where she came from and where school she kind of went to, I guess. She didn't say school, but you know.
Well, she asked like because they're fixing the ship. Like Ahsoka is helping her fix the ship. Mm-hmm. And Trace asks her, you know, hey, where did you learn how to do all this? And Ahsoka just says, you know, she went to the best academy that was topside. Mm-hmm. And it was called Skywalker Academy.
And then she kind of like winces, hoping she doesn't know. Did you notice?
Right. Which was really funny because I was ready to just like cry. And then she's like, ooh, is that like a known name? And then she's like, oh, never heard of it. And she's like,
yeah,
ooh.
She has that kind of moment of relief where it's like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. I wasn't found out there.
Yeah.
But so
I love how like, you know, she has that moment like, crap, you know, he's a famous Jedi. Mm-hmm. You know, like, did I just give myself away? And then she's like, nah, I don't know him. And, you know, she was like relieved, but she had that little scared moment.
A little bit of like lump in your throat kind of thing.
Right. And it was cute because it didn't allow me to cry.
Yeah, they made it that way specifically. I love it. I love how they do that.
But Skywalker Academy, please make it a thing. It can be its own theme park at Disney World. Skywalker Academy.
Yeah, they got like Skywalker Ranch. Why not Skywalker Academy?
Right. Sign me up. I am packing. My bags are packed.
Dude.
I'm ready to go.
What if they're making like the, you have that training dojo thing on the new Star Cruiser hotel? Mm. What if they're making that like Skywalker Academy?
I just want a shirt that says Skywalker Academy.
You can make one.
I can make one. I think that's going to be my next quarantine project is a Skywalker Academy shirt.
Did you notice in that mechanic shop where they're working on the ship, there's a deactivated pit droid in the corner?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's a super small Easter egg, but I loved it.
Aw, no, I missed it. I love the pit droids.
Yeah. And I like that they showed him in The Mandalorian, too. That was great.
Mm, yeah, I definitely noticed it in The Mandalorian. Mm.
And so the ship that Trace calls, well, the ship that they're working on, she has a name for it.
The Silver Angel.
Which, you know, gives everybody kind of a laugh because it's kind of
lame.
But it's an interesting parallel to, you know, there are actually angels in the Star Wars universe. And they appear in season one of The Clone Wars.
Mm, true.
And Anakin talks about them in The Phantom Menace.
Right. Are you an angel? An angel. They live off the moons of Iago, I think.
And Iago, if I'm not mistaken, is like, there's this one episode in The Clone Wars, and it's like this kid.
I think you're right.
The kid who like rebuilt the droids. Mm-hmm. I think that's Iago.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. And I wouldn't put it past Filoni to put that in there.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, that's the details that we all love.
Now, I also thought that Silver Angel was an interesting kind of offshoot of, like, Millennium Falcon.
Hmm, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, like, not necessarily. And actually, I don't have this in my notes. I was just thinking it right now. But, yeah, like, you know, Silver, Millennium, Angel, Falcon. I don't know. Like, just a kind of like a little play off of that.
Yeah, the wordplay there definitely makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But I love that Ahsoka hates the name. She's like, oh, yeah, it's great.
And then later, even Rafa's like, you might want to rethink that. Like, I told her, like, that's a weird name. Mm-hmm. But I like that Ahsoka's, the design of her clothing in this season.
Yeah.
Got that blue mechanic kind of jumpsuit. And some people really don't like it. But I really like that the transition from her clothes as a Jedi Padawan to what we see her wearing in Rebels as Fulcrum, there's a bridge there between those two phases of her life that we see mm-hmm. with this like blue jumpsuit. And I like that. She also kind of has like, I thought it was funny because I don't know if this was intentionally done. I mean, it probably was because it's all animation, so they have to do something intentionally.
Right.
Her like pant legs, they have like a boot flare at the bottom, you know, like like people who wear wear boots, they used to do those in the 70s, you know, like those wide
flare. Bell bottoms.
Exactly. And she has that. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Don't see that very often.
No, you don't. It did make it unique.
Yes. And so they eventually get the ship running. And okay, we got to talk about why they're leaving. So what was the whole thing there? Like, where are they going?
So Rafa shows up and they have a job, and Trace is like, okay, well, you know, you have a pilot right here. And Trace gets upset because Rafa didn't want Trace. She wanted another pilot, like a more experienced pilot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because as we find out a little bit later in the episode, Trace is not an experienced pilot. She's, you know, she has these grand overtures in her head. And, you know, like she thinks she's a great pilot, but she's never actually done any mm-hmm. of it. So she's untested. And as we're going to find out, the job that Rafa has found is not exactly for an inexperienced pilot.
Right. And I really like that we, as the audience, as well as Ahsoka and Trace, so all of us together, other than Rafa, we're not clued in on what this job is.
Mm-mm. I assumed it was something like a smuggling.
Yeah, something sketchy.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Firefly?
No.
Okay.
The one that got canceled and everyone's upset about it?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that I don't know. That's the only thing I know about Firefly.
All right, well, you have a quarantine homework assignment. You're going to watch it.
I'm not in quarantine.
Well, neither am I, but
I wish I was.
Go into work tomorrow and just like walk up to your, I don't know, do you have like a supervisor or something?
Yeah.
Like walk up to their office door and like lick the doorknob or something, and then they'll send you home.
Actually, I have to come in and check my fever. I mean, my temperature.
My fever.
Before I clock in. I check my fever every day.
Check my fever!
If I'm below 102, we're good.
102, that's right for you. No, so there was a TV show called Firefly. And the creator of it, Joss Whedon, he also created Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was my first love. Actually, I found Buffy and Star Wars the same year. So, yeah. So, I promise you this relates, okay? So, Joss Whedon, the creator of Firefly, also created Buffy, was very inspired by Han Solo, in love with Han Solo, okay? The main character of Firefly, his name is Malcolm Reynolds, Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
Captain Jack Sparrow.
Exactly. All right, he is essentially Han Solo, all right, just with a very long brown coat, which is a story point in the show. There was a big galactic civil war. He was on the losing side of the war. So anyway, it's after this, it was called the Unification War. And it was essentially kind of like Star Wars. Like there was like the Federacy or whatever, and they were trying to unite all the planets. Okay. And he fought for the losing side, which was called the Resistance.
Hmm.
The Brown Coat Resistance is what it was called. But anyway, so the show takes place years after this war, and he is basically a smuggler. He has a ship, which is called Serenity, which is where the name of the movie comes from, that because there was a continuation movie after the TV series. But anyway, he's very much a Han Solo type, and he has this ship, and he gets a crew, and he's just taking these odd jobs throughout the galaxy. And sometimes it's, you know, bad jobs, sometimes it's good jobs, you know what I mean? So, like, it immediately gave me this Firefly kind of vibe, with getting the crew and, you know, just kind of taking on odd jobs to like Malcolm Reynolds would really like Rafa.
Okay.
Like he's his kind of girl.
My reaction to the Clone Wars coming back was honestly just disbelief. In fact, I didn't believe it until I was physically in the studio recording the first episode. Even though I get to use my own voice for Ahsoka, I had been doing Rebels Ahsoka for so long, and she was so much older, and truthfully, I spoke in a much lower register in my voice for Rebels. So I had to go back in time and remember, okay, how old is Ahsoka now? I watched a lot of the episodes in season 5, and I tried to get my voice back to that place. It definitely took a couple takes, a couple conversations with Dave Filoni, but eventually we got there.
In the beginning of the episode, Ahsoka isn't in the greatest mindset. We need to remember that the Jedi have betrayed Ahsoka. She begins her journey still a little wounded and feeling abandoned. She hasn't really been on her own before, and she doesn't really know if she fits in anywhere after leaving the Jedi Order.
There was a sequence where we first see Ahsoka. She's riding in on a speeder bike, but it's a kind of like junky speeder, and she's going into traffic, and the speeder starts to malfunction. And I remember struggling so hard to get that right. I had all the classic speeder bike sounds that we usually use, but it just wasn't quite junky enough. So I remembered that Ren Kleiss, who's the sound designer for The Last Jedi, had created these like jalopy skim speeder sounds. And so I found those and I started cutting bits of that in with our original speeder bike sound and then just combining those two layers. I'm just like, finally. That scene was working.
We were really applying ourselves to that underworld, and we tried to build on that underworld. So we built our muscle on the early Clone Wars, so we had a lot to reference. But then we needed this Trace and Rafa area. So for me, that garage for Trace and Rafa needed to feel like, you know, it's not flattering. It's a service area. So we needed to separate that out quite a bit from what everyone knows of 1313. This is Trace and Rafa's little world.
Trace and Rafa are two girls that live in the underworld of Coruscant. They represent kind of the average citizen that's going about their daily lives, and I wanted to show that in many ways the Jedi were out of touch with those people, that Ahsoka's taught that they're keepers of the peace and that they have this great job and that they police the galaxy, but they've gotten so top-heavy that they don't even realize that most of what they're doing isn't helping the average person, and that the average person has no contact with the Jedi Knight. The average person really doesn't know what they do, and from afar it can seem like they're not actually doing a lot of things to help them.
When Ahsoka meets Trace and Rafa, her eyes are truly opened to meet girls her age that have a completely different life experience from her. Truthfully, it kind of rocks her world. She has no idea how other people live their life and that they look at Jedi in a different way than she does. But you know, Ahsoka was already questioning the Jedi. So to hear these other opinions, it's really eye-opening to Ahsoka.
Trace is the younger, slightly more naive, but ambitious Ahsoka. And Rafa is the potential, slightly bitter, going dark, doing whatever it takes to achieve an end possibility of who Ahsoka could become. So they represent two different possible characters that Ahsoka could be at this crossroads in her life. Really, I think Ahsoka, as a young person, wants to fit in. And her worldview is getting challenged by these two girls. And her worldview was just kind of broken by the Jedi. So what does she do and where is that going to end her up? And those are the questions that I wanted to kind of attack as we see her making these life decisions heading towards the end of the war.
My initial, as well as right now, even a continuing reaction, I don't like Rafa. I don't like her.
I don't like her either.
I know, like, we're not supposed to in some cases. I really like that they did this on purpose. They have the juxtaposition that Ahsoka sees what future she could have if she goes down one path, and then she could be like Trace, or she could be like Rafa. She could get bitter and she could start doing things like, she has this almost like a choice to make herself, like, you know, kind of like symbolic. You got sisters that, you know, obviously care about each other, but they have very different ways of approaching life and jobs and things to do. And so she kind of has this choice to make as to, now that she's not bound to anything, she can create her own path, like our last fortune cookie, which we didn't talk about yet. What is the fortune cookie for this one?
Mistakes are valuable lessons, often learned too late.
Which is obvious, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so you made a mistake. That was too late. It's like, it's almost like you're just having a regular conversation. It's not like this grand, you know, philosophical statement.
No, and it also brings to mind one of my favorite musical theater songs.
And what would that be?
It's from the show Aida. It's called I Know the Truth. And it's a princess, and she was to marry the prince, and the prince falls in love with a slave girl. And he, you know, like, she knows this, but she's going to marry him anyway to get power because he's going to be the pharaoh. And then she's going to lock them in a cave together where they can just die in the cave because they're in love. And then she's going to rule the kingdom. But it's just this really powerful song, and it's all about how she knows, but, you know, she needs to do this. And it's great. It's wonderful. Makes me cry.
So we start on this thing where they actually come out of the mechanic bay, right? And so they're starting to rise up out of the major, what is that even called? Like that shaft.
Undercity.
Yeah. And they're starting to go up and trying to get to topside. And like I said, in the last part of our episode here, and you mentioned it too, that you noticed how the engines of the ship look a lot like the Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And even the interior of the cockpit reminded me of it.
Yeah, a little bit. Yes, it did remind me of that.
Like, I was looking, I'm like, is there that pink piece of tape or something on the the other chair behind the pilot?
Maybe it is there.
It's not there. I looked. So the next part here is probably your favorite and my favorite.
Oh, it's your favorite too? We have the same favorite?
Absolutely. Awesome. You know it is. I told you that
before you saw it, I was like...
Did. I don't want to spoil it.
That's right. You did. You're like, you need to see this. I'm like, I will.
Yeah. And I watched it really early in the morning before work.
And I'll admit, I did know that it was something Anakin related. A, because you told me it would be my favorite part. And B, because I saw your Facebook post, like you posted that picture of Anakin.
Yeah, that I can't control, man.
No, I know. And that's fun. Like, I didn't take it as a spoiler. I just thought, I'm like, okay, this is definitely like, he was definitely talking about an Anakin moment.
Yeah.
And then all day at work, I'm like, oh my God, what was it? Like, I think I texted you. I was ready to go to the bathroom for like a half an hour and like just sit in the bathroom and watch it on my phone. Yo quiero Taco Bell, which would not work because we do not have toilet paper.
You're out still?
Still. We get a little bit every day and it is gone. People are knucking futs.
Maybe they should. That should have been the job. Go get toilet paper in this episode.
Unfortunately, they made these too long ago, so
yeah,
you know, like, we didn't know
it wouldn't fit.
Whatever animated series we get 4 years from now will definitely have a smuggling job that deals with toilet paper, I'm sure,
or some kind of something like that, right? Yeah. All right, so I love Ahsoka's panic when they fly into a military lane.
Yeah,
like, you can see it, and she hears Admiral Wolf Yularen's voice on the comm system. I just love the way they animated her. Like, she looks, like, visibly disturbed, and she's like, don't answer that. You don't have to answer that.
Don't answer that. And so what does she do?
Trace answers it. But I love that we get to see the Venerator-class destroyer, which, you know, is the precursor to the Imperial Star Destroyer.
Yes.
And then the Republic gunships are going towards it. So eventually, like, they can't really get out of the military lane, or Trace doesn't want to.
Which, how does that work? I don't understand that. I mean, they're flying. Like, couldn't she have just went down?
Well, I think what Trace was saying was, like, don't tell me what to do. So she was kind of being rebellious a bit. She could have moved out of the lane.
Well, yeah, that's why, like, I didn't get it. It's like, okay, you're not supposed to be in the military lane. Get out of the military lane.
Right.
It's not like it's on a highway where there's, like, you literally can't go into the other lane because the cars are coming the other way.
Yeah, I mean, don't know how that works.
It was just open airspace.
But I know that when the comm system activates, then it's almost like you're caught already anyway. You just might as well deal with whatever you have to at that point. But I just really like that they had a throwback to when they're trying to get the shuttle clearance codes in the original trilogy. And there's just like, pull up.
Yeah, pull up. Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And you know what she reminded me of, Trace?
Who?
Ahsoka. In those first episodes of the Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Where they're trying to get
stubborn
stinky.
She was. Yeah, and like, just, you know, the way, like, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to do. Like, she, I don't know, like, it kind of, the way, and this is the animation, so this could be deliberate, but like, the way Ahsoka was kind of glaring at her, like, you know, I don't know, there was definitely some stuff going on there.
Maybe she was feeling the, you know, like a common bond there because she could see herself in Trace when she was younger.
Right, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, that also just plays into what I was saying before. That makes sense, because that connects in that she's seeing what direction she could go in life and which one she's wanting to kind of be at this point. But so eventually they're going in the same direction as these Republic gunships. And I'm not sure what the Republic gunships are doing. I don't know if they're bringing supplies or whatever, or they're just loading up the Star Destroyer.
So, yeah, so they're flying by, and we go into the, I keep wanting to call it a Star Destroyer. What is it actually called?
It's a Venerator class destroyer.
Venerator class destroyer. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it is called a destroyer. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, so, and this scene resembles Return of the Jedi almost to a T. Like, there's different dialogue, of course. And for those of you that might not know what I'm talking about the scene with Chewie and Han and Luke and Leia and the droids, and they're in the Imperial shuttle going to Endor. And, you know, shuttle Tidarium, what is your cargo and destination? Like, that whole thing. I'm endangering the mission, I shouldn't have come. And what happens is, I forget who goes first, like, if Anakin senses it first or if Ahsoka senses it first, but...
So just like you said in Return of the Jedi, they have to fly by Vader's ship to get to Endor. So they have to have that clearance code. They have to be allowed to continue to pass.
Yes. And in this case, they want the license number.
Yes.
They want Trace's or the ship's license number or whatever.
Yeah. And Trace is like, I need that. I need a pilot licensing.
Which shows her inexperience as a pilot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so what you were saying is it's Anakin who feels and senses Ahsoka in the Force first.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
And as the ship flies by, she then recognizes something as well.
Yeah, she can sense that Anakin's on the ship.
Right.
And they have this moment where they both kind of, they acknowledge each other, exactly like Vader and Luke in Return of the Jedi. Vader knew that Luke was on that ship, and yet he still let them go. No, leave it to me, blah, blah, blah. And then Anakin does the same thing, but unlike Vader, like Vader let them go because he wants to deal with Luke himself. Anakin is letting Ahsoka go just because he understands what she's been through. And, you know, sure, maybe if they arrest her, then he can have like a kind of reconciliation moment with her. But he understands that now is not the time for that. So he just kind of lets her go and they're going on their way.
Like we've said, it's just a extremely touching moment that I didn't see coming at all.
I didn't either. I did not expect it at all.
But the moment that he said, who's on that ship?
No one.
I was like, wait a second. This is going to lead into something that we've seen before. And of course, it imitates or mirrors or parallels or however you want to say it, those scenes in Return of the Jedi. And it literally made me audibly, like, I don't even want to make it now because it sounds stupid, but it surprised me when I was watching it and it made my heart melt because I'm like, they know each other. He can sense that she's there. She can sense that he's there, but he is, like you just said, he's allowing someone to pass who he feels a Force connection with. And he could have had them arrest them or bring, you know, and talk to Ahsoka or whatever. But he didn't, because I almost feel like Anakin, maybe this isn't the first time he knows she's going by somewhere, but he's letting her kind of do her own thing because he understands she needs to kind of, she said she has to deal with this on her own without him, without the Jedi.
Without the Jedi.
And so maybe he's, as a kind of older brother, like she mentioned in the last episode, kind of keeping tabs on her, but in like a loving way.
Yes, I agree 100%.
And so, yeah, I really love that. I think I could watch that over and over again.
So could I. That's going to be one of those scenes that...
And yeah, the music and the whole Anakin closing his eyes, and it was just...
And the way that it mirrors Return of the Jedi, and the coolest part is, it's the same character. In a way, like, you know, in this one, it's Anakin and in the other one, it's Vader. And like, it's almost two opposite reactions because he wants to, you know, he lets Luke go because of hatred or the dark side and he wants to deal with them himself. And then he lets Ahsoka go out of love.
Well, see, that also makes me think about when he says, you know, no, leave it to me, or well, he doesn't want them to stop Luke.
I'll deal with them myself.
I would have to disagree. I don't think he's doing that out of hatred or out of a dark side. I think maybe he still is showing flickering of that light in him.
Well, no, because he was going to bring Luke to the Emperor.
He was, but so was Kylo with Rey. But you have the same thing there where it's like, there's something there that's not out of just the dark side. Like he...
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's that connection.
like that whole part, that whole scene in Return of the Jedi where they have on Endor, where they have that conversation. Like that is...
It is the name of your true self you've only forgotten.
Yeah, it is even more of a connection that he can still be a human even underneath all of this cybernetic equipment.
That's another scene that I could watch over and over and over again.
And I love how he says, "It is too late for me, son." Yeah. Like, it's just one of those things where, and that, of course, that mirrors and parallels things with the sequel trilogy. But so anyway, I enjoyed that scene, and then they continue flying by, and then they hit hyperspace. They go into hyperspace, right?
Mm-hmm.
To go on this job. And I love the part where the whole ship is shaking. And I initially just thought, well, it's probably just a crappily made ship. You know, it's not really well constructed.
Right.
And then later we find out that she had the air brakes on.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And she unflips it. She's like, "I could have been bad." Like, yeah, that could have been bad. You could have been in three different places.
Yeah, that could have been really bad. Traveling through hyperspace ain't like dusting crops, boy.
You could bounce into a supermarket. And...
Exactly. I love it.
So they come out of light speed, and immediately, what did you think? Because I had immediate first word in my head.
What was your first word?
Solo.
Oh, seriously? See, I didn't.
That was my first thought.
If they had gone right to the spice mines, I would have thought that.
I thought it because of the light through the maelstrom, the lights that were kind of like lining it.
I missed that the first time.
Yeah, and that whole, okay, the cloud and everything, I was like, wait a second, we've seen this somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that that was not only a connection to Solo, A Star Wars Story, but also they're traveling, of course, to Kessel, which we know as the place where the spice mines are.
Yes.
And the first time we hear spice mines is, do you remember?
Was it A New Hope?
Yeah, it was C-3PO. Yeah,
C-3PO. No, I knew it was C-3PO. I couldn't remember if it was A New Hope or Return of the Jedi. Yeah, we'll be sent to the spice mines of Kessel. And
yeah. And then, of course, I also now think of Poe being a spice runner.
Oh, my God. I know. It's true. You were a stormtrooper? We could do that all day.
It was a lot of nice little connections. But what I really loved, and for the upteenth time, which we talk about all the time, you know where I'm going with this, is the animation.
Mm-hmm.
They knocked it out of the park with this.
They really did. Like, they all deserve a raise. They all deserve their own show. They just the
shadows, the color, the light. I mean, it was really well done. I loved like the vast landscapes they did on this, like the wide angle shots, kind of like the Mandalorian, you know. Loved that. And
that palace looked beautiful.
Yeah, it really did. I also was kind of confused for a second because we see a lush green forested planet.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, this doesn't look like Kessel. And even Ahsoka said that when they finally got to the mine. She's like, "This looks more like the Kessel I've heard about." You know, like it looks like that brown kind of red ore dusty.
Yeah, I was confused too.
Well, I found out that that's actually the southern hemisphere that's all lush and green.
Oh, okay.
The northern hemisphere is where all the strip mining and all that is done, which is why it looks different. And so I really did like, too, that when they're flying over... Actually, what did they do first? Did they go to the mines first or they go to the castle first?
No, they go to the castle first.
Okay, so they went to that castle. And when they were sitting inside and having that dinner, all I could think of, because I looked at the other characters that were by that table, all I could think of was Shrek. I really... It made me think Shrek with the music, like very medieval timesy and castle-y. And I'm like, that's kind of different. I don't think I've ever seen something like this in Star Wars.
That's funny. I did not go there.
Yeah. So we see them get off of the ship and they have they meet somebody. I forgot his name, but he's the major domo to the king.
Yes.
And that reminded me of Bib Fortuna being the major domo for Jabba. It's the same kind of thing because he's also a Twi'lek.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and it reminded me of King Yoruba is the one that he's referring to. And we briefly hear about him in the Clone Wars in previous seasons. He's also owning the spice mines of Kessel at that point. But then also when we see in Solo, like we have him also owning the spice mines. So he's kind of in control of all of it. But of course, living this lavish lifestyle because of what the spice brings. Did you have anything that popped out at you in this particular scene where they're like discussing about what spice is?
So I liked that you got an idea of what the spice was, like that it can be used for different things.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I always kind of thought it was just kind of like a drug metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but like it turns out, it doesn't have to be. It can be turned into medicine too, you know? So like, I don't know. I thought that was neat. Because like I said, I always kind of just assumed, oh, it's the, you know, the heroine of Star Wars or whatever.
Right. Well, that's something that I really like, that they made a kind of real world, real life application, in that the first thing that I thought of was like opium. Okay.
Yeah.
So you can use it in different ways, where you can have it trafficked as a drug, or you can use it to help relieve pain in patients in the proper, you know, we obviously got to get that under control because it's a huge epidemic now. But I think it's like a nice connection in that, like, they kind of have the same thing, that just called spice in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, my stupid brain was like, smoke spice every day. Probably what Jabba's doing. In that hookah. You know, in that hookah.
Exactly.
Oh, actually, that reminds me. Okay, so I just thought of this. Actually, we'll get to this later. It's about the spice. But so after that, they leave to go to the Northern Hemisphere, which has the spice mines.
Mm-hmm. Which is the much more familiar area for us.
Yes. And Trace looks down and she thinks they're all droids that are mining.
And
right.
They're not.
And we knew immediately, because we've seen Solo. We know that they're slaves,
right?
Not droids. And
but what about the droid attack on the Wookiees?
Yeah.
Used that at work the other day.
Did you?
Someone, I forget, they were talking about like being out of toilet paper or something like that. And, you know, what a travesty it is. And I went, you know, straight faced. I'm like, but what about the droid attack on the Wookiees? And they looked at me like I had five heads, and I walked away without answering them.
They probably thought you're a weirdo.
Mm-hmm, probably.
So when they get to the spice mines, Ahsoka mentions that they're slaves. They're not droids. Trace is surprised that slavery still exists on Kessel. And that reminded me of Padme.
I was just going to say that, yes.
Yeah, and she's just surprised that it still exists in the galaxy. And it's the same connection of like, Rafa was like, nah, there's no way, because the Republic would have gotten rid of it.
No.
Yeah, and Ahsoka's like, you know, she said something to the effect of, yeah, you think they would have. And, you know, it shows the Republic has, you know, blind spots, or is at least willing to look the other way when it suits them. Mm-hmm. And it could be because of corrupt bureaucrats, or maybe because the Jedi are too busy fighting the war to be dealing with slavers. It could be both. And it's just, it's kind of a, I wouldn't say necessarily, especially in the US or in like this day and age, but like in the past, it kind of hits home, because everybody can kind of understand like, oh, this also happens in the Star Wars universe, because of course it's something based off of similar things that we know of in real life. That was kind of a very, I don't want to say like a deep part of the episode, but it was kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It was,
it had shades.
It's heavy. It was heavy.
It was heavy, Doc.
Like, it was like, what is that from?
Back to the Future.
Oh, yes. I haven't seen the movie for years. Did you also know that the mines that we see when the ship's landing, they're the same mines that were modeled after the ones we saw in Solo? Like, they're not, it's not just like, oh, it looks similar. It's like the design is modeled after that.
I thought it pretty much looked exactly like Solo, yeah. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So they get the spice, right? And they load it up onto the ship. And so they're flying back in hyperspace. And this is where we find out who they're delivering it to.
Yes. Which is the Pikes crime syndicate.
Yes. And the Pikes are also in Solo, but they're also in previous seasons of Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Yeah, I forgot about that until I was like rewatching some on Disney Plus.
I like the design more in the animation than in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Yeah.
Because when I saw it in the film, it kind of took me a second to realize that they were Pikes.
That it was the Pikes, yeah. They definitely look cooler in animation. But, I mean, that's the trade-off sometimes, you know? I hate to say it, I think if they do bring Ahsoka into the live-action stuff, I don't think she's going to look right, no matter who it is, whether it's Rosario Dawson or whoever. I think just because she was born in animation... Mm-hmm. I feel, I don't know, like something about her will be off in live action.
Yeah, I mean, eventually I think we'll just get used to it. But on the outset, I agree. It probably is going to be a little jarring.
Yeah, it's there you go. That's a good word for it, jarring.
And the Pikes are actually one of the crime syndicates that Maul absorbs into his Shadow Collective.
Yes.
So, yeah, that, and then they have like the Black Sun, and they have like the Hutts, of course, are the other syndicate.
Which Black Sun is another one that they got from the expanded universe.
Oh, Crimson Dawn. That's another one from Solo.
Yeah, Crimson Dawn was Drayden Voss, right? That's the one that him and Kira worked for?
Mm-hmm. Which worked for Maul, yeah. So yeah, I like those, the connections there, but the Pikes in particular, like I really like their design and how their buildings look like their heads.
Yeah.
I just like how that looks. It looks very futuristic, not exactly like Kamino, but kind of a design where it's very unusual.
They also reminded me of Independence Day.
Yes, that's right.
I don't know, now, not the big ugly alien, but like, you know, when they like chop the alien up
mm-hmm.
and there's the little guy inside.
Or, but even like the massive ship and stuff like that. Like,
right. Yeah. But it totally, yeah, it gave me Independence Day vibes.
Yeah. That's a good one. I didn't think of that till you said it. That's good.
Which, talk about disappointing sequels.
Yeah. I didn't even see the sequel. I knew it was going to suck.
Don't. Sean and I were so excited to see it. And then we were sitting there and we're like, meh. Yeah.
So they're traveling back to get it to the Pikes, and they're trying to figure out, like, Ahsoka is like freaking out and like, no, you can't, because they're like notorious gangsters. They'll take everything from you, your ship, your life, everything. And so there's this whole scuffle that happens on board between Ahsoka and Trace and Rafa. And so Trace just gets pissed off and decides, you know what? They're not going to take my ship.
Yeah.
And she launches the cargo of the spice into hyperspace, which is now, of course, obviously lost somewhere in space.
And that's the moment that I disliked Trace. She was being an immature brat.
She was not thinking things through. And they mentioned that in the rest of the episode.
I know that, but like, it just totally rubbed me the wrong way.
I still like Trace better than Rafa.
No, so do I. And like, I was with Trace up until that moment. That is when, for me personally, I was like, ugh, she's just like this immature kid. And like, I don't know, for some reason, when she was talking about like, you know, being up in the stars and being a pilot and blah, 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 like, I was like, oh, great. You know, like, she's going to be awesome and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, well, no, she actually kind of sucks. It's like what Jabba says in the deleted scene, or the undeleted scene in A New Hope. Like, you know, you're gonna dump your spice at the first sign of trouble or whatever, you know?
Okay, that's what I was gonna bring up, actually. That because Greedo was after him because Jabba put a bounty on Han's head, and so he dumped the spice, or he got boarded, you know, like any other smugglers do. And so that was a nice connection to the cantina scene. And that's, we actually saw it happening.
Yeah, but when Han did it, it was badass. When Trace did it, not so much. It'd be like if Ahsoka took Stinky and like, you know, oh no, I'm just going to drop him off a cliff because, you know, I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Literally, that is the first thing I thought about.
Drop him off a cliff.
Because I don't know about you, but every time I watch Clone Wars, when the credits start rolling, it wants to play the original Clone Wars movie. But yeah, I just like, I had, when I saw this episode, I had a vision of Ahsoka just like, you know, dropping little Stinky the Hutt over the cliff. And it's like, you know, because she can't deal with the pressure.
That was supposed to be a shocking moment for everybody, because it's like, who would have thought she would do that? And then it...
Well, yeah, it was dumb.
I agree. I mean, she even recognizes later that that was stupid, and Ahsoka has to figure out a plan now.
Okay, but what do you think the Pikes are going to do when you show up with no spice?
Take the ship.
Exactly. After she dumped the spice, I did not enjoy her character.
Do you think she'll maybe become redeemed in your eyes later?
Perhaps.
What if she saves Ahsoka from the Pikes?
That's not going to happen.
You don't know that.
Ahsoka is going to save herself from the Pikes.
How?
She's Ahsoka. It doesn't matter how.
Ahsoka is not Anakin.
She may as well be.
No, because that actually leads right into how she uses the Jedi mind trick on the Pike leader. But it has its limitations, because they're caught in a tractor beam and they're stuck now.
Yeah, which was the end of the episode.
Which was the end of the episode. It was a cliffhanger, but it showed that the mind trick can only go so far. It cannot stop the tractor beams and the ships.
Well, no, see, I took it as once she started to fire up the ship, like, the mind trick wore off or something.
No, mind trick was still on the leader. It was the other guy next to him that didn't have it happen to him.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And he was the one dealing with all this. I don't know what happened.
Now, see, Anakin would have, like, if Anakin had been there, he would have just taken out his lightsaber and killed the Pikes.
Yeah, after episode 3, maybe.
Hey, we're close enough to episode 3.
Well, no, he wouldn't just randomly murder them, because it's, yeah, unless they were gonna hurt him somehow, which they didn't show anything like that. They were just gonna arrest them or something. True. But anyway,
now if Anakin had force minded, that's not a word, Jedi mind tricked them, it would have worked for all of them, and we would have gotten away.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I didn't understand how Trace didn't recognize that Ahsoka was right next to her and speaking that. I was assuming that Trace would look over at her like, what are you doing? But it's almost like she wasn't hearing Ahsoka say, you know, the words that she did to mind trick the Pike leader, which his name is Marg Krim, apparently.
I believe so. I just wouldn't have dumped the spice. I'm sorry. Like, you can always figure out a way to get the shit back or whatever. Like, I just, no, I don't know. You're hired to do a job. You do the job. I don't know. Or take it to the other planet to turn it into medicine, which Ahsoka suggested.
Right.
You could do that. And then, you know, you would have never gotten to the Pikes. And then you just would have been running from the Pikes.
The viewers and everybody, we knew this was a mistake that she did that. That's why it's supposed to make us all gasp and supposed to make even Trace and Ahsoka go, Rafa and Ahsoka be like, what did you do that for? And they're actually on each other's side. That's supposed to be shocking. Yes, I agree with you. It was a mistake. But I think it's also one of those moments where we all make stupid mistakes. And that was the theme of this. That was the fortune cookie, right? It was too late to write that mistake.
Correct.
So that's something that I would have to agree that I'm not saying Trace is a favorite of mine, but
no, I still like Trace. I just think she was being stupid.
Yeah, I think she was too. I think
and young and immature.
Yeah. Hopefully she'll grow from this.
Hope so, because if not, she's going to get herself killed. If not by the Pikes, then by someone else. Because she needs to go back to level 1313 and just like work on motorcycles.
But I almost feel like if she did get killed, it's also partly Rafa's fault.
Oh, totally. Because she's the one that got her into this.
She got her into this. She's kind of doing selfish things, but under the guise that she's doing it for both of them, a sister.
Oh, yeah. No, it's totally selfish. There's no, she's not doing anything for her. Like that moment with Ahsoka and Anakin when Anakin let her go.
Mm-hmm.
Rafa wouldn't have done that for.
No.
Trace, no.
Well, even when they got caught in at the very end and they have the ship surrounding them with the tractor beam, Rafa even tells Ahsoka that when she gets interrogated, that she's going to blame it all on her. She's obviously looking out for herself.
Exactly.
But to end it on a nice note, did you notice that Ashley's voice is a little lower in this season?
You know, I thought so.
She's trying to match Ahsoka's age as she grows older because she doesn't sound like Ahsoka from season one or two.
No, she doesn't.
But Ashley herself sounds like that. That's her squeaky high voice. She's actually toned it down and gone down a couple octaves.
I thought she exaggerated it a little bit in the early seasons.
Well, yeah, she did because she had to do that. But like if you hear her normally speaking, like on a live Instagram or something, it's not how she sounds in these episodes because she's purposely doing that to make Ahsoka sound like she's getting older.
Well, yeah, she did the same thing in Rebels.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's how she's trying to bridge that, just like with the clothing that I talked about and how Ahsoka is growing older.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle piece.
Yeah, I really like hearing that and hearing Ashley talk about that on like a little interview where she's trying to make it as almost like a clean transition from where we got cut off and then now season seven. And then it's going to go into, of course, it's going to go into episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, but then Ahsoka later in Rebels.
Which, from the actor standpoint, is a very difficult thing to do. Like, voice acting in general is very hard to do because you have to rely specifically on your voice. Like, when you're in theater or, like, you know, like, when you're in a movie, you can have, like, special effects enhance your performance and you can do all sorts of stuff like that. In theater, you've got the big, broad mannerisms and all that stuff that can help enhance your performance. With a voiceover work, yes, you have the animation and stuff, but it's all you. It's just your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you have to go to certain places and like jump around and stuff. Like if you're, you know, if your character's trying to run, you have to like, it's really like people do not, I don't think they give voice actors enough credit. Really.
Yeah.
Like the good ones, like the good memorable ones are, you know, people like Ashley and the whole crew behind the Clone Wars. And they constantly do amazing work and I'm constantly in awe of them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how connected Ahsoka and Anakin still are. When Trace and Rafa and Ahsoka first fly off in the Silver Angel, and Trace just flies off without clearance and she gets caught. And even I was surprised that Ahsoka and Anakin sense each other. It's really a cool moment to see that they're still connected through the Force, and that is actually Anakin that allows them to go. It's one of my favorite moments in that episode.
Kessel, how do you separate the two tones? How do you separate, like, the Kessel that we know from the movies to the Kessel that isn't excavated? And so for that, you immediately draw on films that are the extreme of where we know we're going to Kessel. So we know that Kessel is slaves, mining, rust. So you go for the opposite of that.
I remember Dave first telling us about Trace and Rafa. I really like the different characteristics. I mean, the voice actresses for both of them did such an outstanding job. We really tried to lay into Rafa, her attitude of being the older sister. We wanted Rafa to really talk with her hands a lot, so we really kind of tried to incorporate that a bit more. And then Trace is just the one you identify with. She's the one who is in this situation, but she wants to be better. She doesn't want to be doing these jobs, but she has to in order to survive. They're really cool characters.
Trace and Rafa, they're an interesting pair, and they're doing what they need to do to survive. They probably feel, even though they're on Coruscant, if there's a bright center of the universe, we're on the places farthest from. I always felt that we all feel that way. I love my home. I love where I grew up, but I had to get out. And I think it changes your perspective when you take your first step into a larger world and you see the world as other people experience it, and different cultures, different customs, different ways of doing things. It gives you appreciation for where you're from, but also an understanding and a compassion for where you are and what other people deal with. And so all these things that we experience make up our stories, make up Star Wars.
We definitely see Ahsoka struggle quite a bit in these episodes. She's struggling between, I'm no longer a Jedi, but yet I still have these powers and these abilities, and she tries not to use them. It's almost like, no, I walked away from the Jedi and I'm walking away from that life altogether. But then she finds herself in some hot water, because let's face it, Trace and Rafa put her in a situation where they're in over their heads, and quite frankly, they need Ahsoka to get out of the trouble that they've gotten themselves into. So over the course of these episodes, we watch Ahsoka come to terms with the fact of, you know, she's not using these powers to be a Jedi. She's using her powers to help people.
So, like I mentioned before, I didn't think I could possibly love Ahsoka more than I already do, but I do. And I just want to continue to see her character develop and grow. And then, of course, what we're looking forward to next is not so much Mandalore. I want to see her with Rex again, which would be at Mandalore. But I mean, like, where we had the preview, you know, with all the other clone troopers painted like her.
Yep. Okay.
Like, I really am looking forward to that. And I know that's going to be also a very emotional kind of scene.
Yeah.
And with all the music and everything that's going to be added in. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know what this next one's going to be this coming week, but I think she's eventually, I'm going to just predict that she's eventually now going to part ways with Rafa and Trace and kind of go off on her own and maybe garner what she could have or what she learned from this experience, but like kind of move on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. She's definitely going to move on. And I don't think she'll necessarily, like, leave the two of them to, like, fend for themselves. Like, I think she'll probably make sure they get back to Coruscant or something.
I think she's more concerned about Trace. If something happened to Rafa, she'd be, like, sad that she doesn't have another sister now. But it's more like, I think she's drawn more towards Trace and trying to keep her safe.
Well, yeah, because, you know, she sees a lot of herself in her.
Even though she's being irresponsible, even though she's being immature as a young individual and someone who's not as well-versed in, like, the real world, I think that that's going to be something that Ahsoka's going to try to kind of instill some knowledge into her. And maybe even in this next episode, maybe another prediction is that she'll have more dialogue and conversation with her and maybe say, like, this is how I was when I was younger and this is what I learned from my older brother.
But guess what I didn't do? I didn't drop the spice.
But anyway, that wraps up this episode. We kind of put two together because each individual one didn't have a lot that was happening, so we wanted to kind of compile it together.
We're not done yet.
So how did this all start with the Rise of Skywalker Blu-ray that we want?
It started with a man who ate a bat.
Who, Ozzy?
No one got coronavirus when Ozzy did it. So I don't know who the hell did it this time, but
Oh, he should totally capitalize on that now.
Right?
Like, wasn't me.
Yeah, he ate a bat before and didn't cause a global pandemic. So no, so as I have done with the previous four movies in the Disney era, I pre-ordered them. I pre-ordered The Rise of Skywalker DVD, Blu-ray, at the Disney store because I enjoy the lithographs. Now, of these five movies, I literally have one lithograph on my wall. I have two. I have the Han and Chewie one from The Force Awakens, and then I have the group shot from in the Millennium Falcon cockpit from Solo, A Star Wars Story. My other standouts are the Kylo Ren helmet one from The Last Jedi, and of course the Darth Vader in Vader's castle in Rogue One, which I'm still mad at myself that I don't have it on my wall for some reason, but oh right, I don't have any wall space. So I wasn't a fan of these lithographs, but I am a completist. I got the other four at the Disney store. So, of course, I have to finish the trilogy, finish the saga at the Disney store. Well, you know, we get our pre-order and everything's great. And then the world closes, including Disney stores. So, Dennis, what is a troubled fan to do when this happens?
Well, we've thought about this a lot. I've thought about this a lot.
Like, what did we do? What?
Well, I want to take a step back for a second.
Oh, okay. Oh, and disclaimer, this is total first world problems. I apologize.
Because I want to voice my grievances with how the digital release was out very early.
Yes, please.
I understand why they did it. I thought it was a nice gesture on the part of Disney and Lucasfilm that because people are staying home now because of the either self-imposed quarantine or at this point, they've been told by state and local officials to stay home to stop the spread of this crazy virus.
Both of my states are now at mandatory stay at home.
Well, you're on the East Coast.
Well, I was going to say, like, the state I live in, New Jersey, and the state I work in, Pennsylvania, are both.
Y'all are just, in the epicenter of it.
Excuse me, we're 3 hours from the epicenter. Thank you very much.
No, whatever. You're the Northeast.
New York City is the epicenter, and that is 3 hours away from me.
Okay, so they released the digital Rise of Skywalker film for everybody to be able to purchase on Vudu or on iTunes.
Keyword there, purchase.
And so as of right now, it's been over a month where people have had access to it so that they can watch.
It has been, hasn't it?
Yeah, so they could watch the whole thing. And what made me upset was that when we pre-order things in life in general, you usually are like an extremely passionate fan about something. And so you expect to receive that earlier than people who are maybe casual fans. But unfortunately, as a result of all this craziness going on across the world, but especially for us here in the US, we weren't able to have access to that like everybody else was unless we purchased it again. So we pre-ordered our Disney store copies, got the lithographs, and then we were going to go get it, but then our malls closed down, our stores closed down because of this spreading pandemic. And so it made me upset that a lot of people got it, but then I kind of was like, okay, whatever. They weren't going to get the pre-order, so they bought it as digital. I'm okay, I'll move on. But then I also got a notification that all the other places where you could buy it was also going to close down. It was originally like a step-by-step thing where they were closing certain stores down or certain locations, and then they eventually just clean-sweeped all of it. So then I got a notification that, of course, I can't pick up the DVD or the Blu-ray from the Disney store, so I can't get the access code for the digital version, which everybody already had.
That's the thing. Like, it's one thing purchasing it, but when we pre-order the physical copy, inside of the physical copy, there is a digital code for the digital release of the movie. So, obviously, if you pre-order the physical copy, you're not going to go buy it again.
Right. But what we decided to do instead, and I had this pre-ordered at the same time I actually pre-ordered the Disney one, because there are multiple copies spread out through multiple retailers with different covers, with different special features, like Vudu, for example. The digital copy that you buy from them has an extra bonus feature that you won't find in the Disney store physical copy or the Disney digital code. And they've spread it out between Best Buy and Walmart and Target and the Disney store And so it's kind of all over the place. And like, there's different variations, like I said, but the Target one has an extra booklet in it that has extra features. It just looks a lot. I like the look of it. I like that it also has,
well,
like
I like that cover art too.
The cover art, yes. And it's also, whenever I get the 4K TV in the future, mm-hmm. it has the 4K disc, exactly. So I can watch it in super clear crystal quality.
I also regret not pre-ordering the Last Jedi Target version, because they have done this for each of their releases. Like, Target mm-hmm. has done, like, the booklet and whatever. And they do it for a lot of things now. They did it for Aladdin, Lion King. You know, it might be something about their partnership with Disney. But I did regret, especially after loving The Last Jedi as much as I do, not pre-ordering the Target version, because, of course, it sold out and whatever. So after my mall shut down and I knew I wasn't going to be able to get the pre-order at the Disney store, I pre-ordered the Target version.
Right. And so the only reason that possibility right now is because grocery stores are essential. They're not closing. Other places like hospitals or certain retails are not closing, but for the most part, everything else is closed. So on the 31st of March, you'd be able to go walk into a physical brick and mortar Target store and pick this up. However, if you pre-ordered it, then they are shipping it. There is no option to pick it up from in store. Correct. So that made me even more upset, because that means it's going to be even later because of all the way that things are shipping out and the way that, you know, shipping facilities are working nowadays. It doesn't say like it's going to be delivered until April. And I just, at this point, it makes me upset that I don't want to pre-order things in advance anymore because of something like this potentially happening again. And like David said, this is a first world problem. We get that. But when you're really looking forward to something and anticipating something, and then you get these multiple surprises that kind of build up, it can be frustrating. So we're just kind of voicing our
frustrations.
Exactly.
Again, we are not saying that our frustration is more than the people that are dying or the country of Italy or something, you know, like we're in perspective. This is just us talking with you guys because it's what we talk about. We talk about Star Wars. And unfortunately, right now, this pandemic is affecting the way we get the release of The Rise of Skywalker.
Come on, let's keep a little optimism.
I even was tempted to purchase it digitally again. That would mean that I would have 3 copies of this movie. Now, the only way I stopped myself from doing that was to remind myself that this wasn't my 10 out of 10 film. Mm. If it was, I would have done it in a heartbeat. I would have 5 copies. I don't even care.
If this had been The Last Jedi, I probably would have done that.
And actually, now that I think about it, I'm going to have 3 copies because of the Skywalker Saga set from Best Buy that I pre-ordered.
Wait, you got that? Did you? How did I miss that?
I don't know if I can pick it up in store, but I did elect to pick it up in store.
You didn't get it today, did you?
No.
Because this guy in the celebration group posted that he got his today.
He got it shipped.
I know, but like, so he got it 3 days early.
Well, okay, so depending on where they live and how the stuff's working there, yeah, some people are going to get it early. Some people got the art of The Rise of Skywalker early too, the book. So it depends on, you know, what's going on in their post office and whatever shipping carrier is doing it. So some people aren't getting it earlier, but I elected to pick it up in store because I don't want it shipped because that's going to take even longer.
Right.
But
is Best Buy still open?
That's my other issue here, where it's like, I've seen it open where they can bring you out packages, but you can't go inside. So I might have to do it that way. We'll see.
What, like you have to call and say, hey, I'm here for my movie?
Yeah. If not, then, oh, well, I'm just going to have to wait till whenever this stuff blows over.
So either way, you're getting it on Tuesday.
Probably from Target. Because if I can't get it from Best Buy, because they're actually fully closed, then...
Oh, Best Buy is fully closed.
Yeah. So okay. So all of it is... This is just disrupting, obviously, other things in our lives. But when it comes to this, I would have already watched the film probably more than once.
Well, exactly. And, like, we've been looking forward to this since we saw the film. Like, we were talking about, oh, when is the DVD going to be released? Like, we need to own this so we can watch it 80,000 times.
Anything else?
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
Good. I can feel your anger. I am defenseless. Take your weapon. Strike me down with all of your hatred, and your journey towards the dark side will be complete.
Another gripe that I have, and you know it is what it is, we know as of right now, maybe in a year it'll change, but as of right now, there is no audio commentary or director's commentary, and there is no deleted scenes. That is extremely disappointing for a Star Wars film.
I was going to say, what are you more disappointed about, the deleted scenes or the commentary? I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say, me personally, I am more disappointed about the deleted scenes.
I am right there with you.
Yeah. Like, as much as I love the commentary, and I told you, I bought the 3D version of The Force Awakens because it had the commentary on it. Like, because I love listening to the commentary. I fall asleep sometimes listening to the Rian Johnson commentary for The Last Jedi. You know what I mean? Like, I like the commentaries, but just because there's, and maybe this is why they're not doing deleted scenes, but like, just because of all the what ifs and the controversy.
But that's been like that for Last Jedi, too.
No, I know, but like, we got deleted scenes from The Last Jedi.
Right, so I don't think that's it. I don't think they're stopping it or not releasing it because there's controversy.
Like, we even had deleted scenes on The Force Awakens.
We literally had deleted scenes for every single Star Wars film except this one, which is what makes this highly irregular and upsetting, because I know that they have the content. They have the things filmed. Like, they have it in the novelization, and we know, because if you look at like the documentary for this, which, like I said, is great, but if you look in the background with like the creature designs or all the things, it matches up with the novelization, and we know from photo stills as well as the concept art that some things were filmed that didn't make it to the final cutting floor.
Are you talking
about
Are you talking about the thing on Mustafar?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Eye of Webbish Bog, that spider-looking oracle that Kylo talks to. That's one of them. But there are also ones where it's like you see more time of Kylo's reforged helmet. You see maybe even scenes I don't even know about. But the frustration is that we don't even get to know if we'll ever get that. I don't think Disney would, and I don't mean to sound negative or like say that they're like super greedy or something.
You want this, don't you?
No one has been able to get out of you what you did. Where is it? Where is it? You've seen it.
Happy beeps, buddy. Happy beeps.
They would release it again with deleted scenes in a year or less, and people would buy it because they want the deleted scene.
Well, that's what they did with The Force Awakens. Not with the deleted scenes, but with the commentary. The DVD came out in April, and they re-released it in November of that year. They released it before Christmas.
Right, so that's a possibility.
They released it before Rogue One. Yeah. Like, they released it in November, and then Rogue One was in the theaters in December.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand the logic behind that, but...
The logic is probably money.
Well, I guess, but...
Like, what is the logic of putting this last film in four or five different retail outlets with different things?
Yeah.
Like, it could have just been the same throughout all of them. You could just go wherever you wanted and pick up a copy, but that's not how it is.
No, no, you're still holding on! Let go!
But that Skywalker Legacy 9 movie set, I really like the design of it, and there's actually...
How did I not know you got that?
You even mentioned, I don't know why, because even in the text back and forth, you were like, no way, like, you made a response when I said that I might have purchased it that same day that we were talking. But anyway... The point is that there's just a really cool, like the cool design of how the thing opens up and how it looks like. There's a YouTube video where, like you said, some people have actually have their hands on it already, and they kind of show you the unpackaging.
Well, if you look in our celebration group, this guy, his name is Dan Thomas. Hi, Dan, if you're listening. He got it today, and he took a picture of each page of the booklet where the movies are, and it's beautiful.
Well, it better be. It's like $280.
I know. It's the concept. So it reminds me of the Complete Saga Blu-ray set because it's like concept art. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not pictures like from the movie, like it's actually concept art, and it is. It's beautiful.
Yeah, so I'm excited to get that to whenever we have the quarantine lifted. Yeah, I'm not worried about it selling out or anything, because not only is it really expensive, but people, if they want to watch it who are casual, they could just go on Disney Plus.
Right. Well, and if they had released it on Disney Plus,
I was about to say that, yeah,
I wouldn't be as upset.
They could have done that. I hate going back to money, but really, that's what the world revolves around. So,
I mean, Disney World is already losing $40 million a day just from being closed.
They'll get it all back through the stimulus of checks and the government.
Are you kidding me? They'll get it all back when we go to Celebration.
Well, if you've listened this far through the episode, I applaud you, because it's a very long one.
Yes. you deserve a Chewbacca medal.
Han medal to Chewbacca, yes.
Yes, exactly.
So thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to our whining and bantering. We appreciate all of you that are listening. If you guys have any kind of suggestions or comments or anything, you could always shoot us an email at dmdp@jawajabber.com or just message us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and we'll try to respond in a timely manner. But yeah, this has been a bit of a long one, but we wanted to combine two of the episodes because they were a little short in themselves when it comes to content. But I think, I don't know if we're going to continue doing this the same way, but especially when it comes to the final episodes, I think we're going to keep it one episode per podcast episode. But we'll see.
Yeah, we're gonna play it by ear, you know?
So thank you again, everybody, for listening. And until next time, my name is Dennis.
And I'm David.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
Jawa Jabber, a Star Wars podcast, is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. All names, sounds, and all Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of Disney and the respective trademark and copyright holders, unless otherwise indicated. Jawa Jabber, broadcasting exclusively on Utini Radio. Smoke spice every day. You gotta give me some more spice.
I will get you as much spice as you need, man. I'm gonna fly out on my titanium eagle.
That's what your ship's gonna be called?
That's what my ship is gonna be called, titanium eagle.
This is the way. This is the way. Listen.
Alright, that wasn't terrible.